Fisher followed Buchan through the crowded street, elbowing aside people who momentarily blocked her view of the man she was following. No one objected out loud. Even on the Street of Gods, people knew about Captain Fisher. She was careful to stay well back, but Buchan showed no signs of caring if he was being followed. The man was deathly tired. Fisher could see it in the way he walked, the way he held his head too carefully erect. But even so, nobody bothered him. They knew about Buchan's reputation, too. Buchan, with Fisher still a discreet distance behind him, made his way along the street, passing through the usual crowd of priests and worshippers. Riot or no riot, business went on as usual on the Street of Gods. From time to time, people called out greetings to Buchan, some clearly false and some just as clearly not. But he answered them all with the same preoccupied nod and wave of the hand. A few people looked as though they might call out to Fisher, but she glared at them until they changed their minds. After a while, she began to realize Buchan was heading into the high-rent section of the Street of Gods. The churches and temples became richer and more ornate, works of art in their own right, and there was a much better class of worshippers, most of whom seemed scandalized at Fisher's presence in their midst. Fisher glared at them all impartially. Buchan finally stepped outside one of the more modest buildings. It was three stories high, with rococo carvings and elegant wrought iron. The building had an anonymous air to it, as though it was a place for those who were just passing through, not staying. The kind of temporary residence popular among people on the way up or on the way down. The management didn't care which, as long as it got cash in advance. Buchan produced a key, unlocked the front door, and stepped inside. Fisher scowled. What was Buchan doing in a place like this? She hesitated a moment, not sure what to do next. Hawk was the one who usually tailed people. She couldn't just barge in and start asking questions about Buchan. He wasn't supposed to know he was being followed. She frowned. She couldn't just hang around outside the place either. People would notice. She made her way around the side of the building and down a narrow alleyway she hoped would lead to a back entrance. Maybe she could sneak in that way and find some low-level staff she could intimidate into providing some answers. Fisher always preferred the direct approach. She hurried down the alleyway, keeping to the shadows when she remembered, rounded the corner, and took in the back of the building. It didn't look nearly as impressive as the front, with uneven paintwork and a filthy backyard. Judging by the smell, the drains weren't working too well either. There was one back door, strictly functional and clearly a servant's and tradesman's entrance. Fisher started toward it, only to stop dead as the plain wooden door suddenly swung open.
Damn.
She darted behind a pile of stacked crates, crouched down, and watched with interest as a hunched and furtive figure pushed the door shut. He was wearing a torn and ratty-looking cloak, with the hood pulled forward, but from her angle, Fisher could see the face clearly. It was Buchan. He reached up to pull the hood even further forward, looked quickly around him, and then hurried along the alley and out into the street. Fisher grinned broadly and stayed where she was a moment to give him a good start. Buchan was definitely up to something. Where could he be going that he couldn't afford to be recognized? Buchan was known and welcomed pretty much everywhere outside of high society. She slipped out from behind the crates, ran silently down the alley, and emerged on the street just in time to see him walking unhurriedly away. He was so confident in his disguise, he didn't even bother to look behind him. Fisher stayed well back anyway, just in case. She was beginning to get the hang of following people. Buchan led her through the luxurious high-rent district of the Street of Gods, where the magnificent buildings struggled to outdo each other in splendor and ostentatious opulence. He passed them all by without looking, until he came to the largest and most ornate structure yet. The temple was as broad as any three churches, and an amazing four stories high. Fisher didn't even want to think about how much money the owners must be paying for spells to protect the place from the violent spring gales. Massive bay windows jutted out into the street. Gold and silver scrollwork shone in abundance, and there was enough intricately carved stonework to have kept entire families of stonemasons busy for generations. One door, centrally placed, a huge slab of polished oak bearing a large brass knocker, stood at the base of the edifice. Engraved into the stone above the door rested a single ornate symbol, known and reviled throughout the Low Kingdoms. Buchan knocked twice and waited. Even from across the street, Fisher could feel his impatience. The door opened and Buckin quickly disappeared inside. Fisher bit her lower lip thoughtfully as the door swung shut behind him. In a way, she was almost disappointed. You didn't expect a man like the legendary Charles Buckin to go sneaking off to the notorious Sisters of Joy. Fisher didn't approve of the sisters. They were dangerous, like a rose with poisoned thorns. In her time as a guard, Fisher had seen men entrapped by the sisters and betrayed by their own weaknesses. They lost all strength and dignity, giving up on everything except the object of their obsession. They threw away their jobs, alienated their families, and sold everything they could lay their hands on to make donations to the sisters. By the time the sister concerned had sucked them dry, it must almost have come as a relief. Fisher folded her arms and leaned back against a church wall, staring thoughtfully at the house of the Sisters of Joy. What the hell was Buckin doing here? It wasn't at all in character for the great romantic she'd heard so much about. Of course, she, if anyone, had good reason to know that people weren't always what their storied personas made them out to be. But still, what if there was something else going on here? Something deeper? Fisher pushed herself away from the wall and unfolded her arms. Whatever Buckin was mixed up in, she wanted to know about it. There were too many secrets in this case. She checked that her sword moved freely in its scabbard and marched over to the sister's door. There was a long pause. Passers-by looked at Fisher in various ways. Fisher glared at them all impartially. The door finally opened a few inches. Fisher put her shoulder to the door and shoved it all the way open. She stalked in past the astonished sister she'd sent flying backwards and looked around her. She saw the understated elegance to the hallway, with delicately fashioned furniture and a deep pile carpet. An ornate glass and crystal chandelier hung from the ceiling, and the air was scented with rose petals. It was actually quite impressive, in a quiet way. Fisher spent time in country mansions that looked less refined. Until she took in the obscene murals on the walls. Fisher felt a blush rising to her cheeks and looked quickly away. The sister recovered her composure and took the opportunity to bow respectfully to Fisher. She stood there looking lovely in an open, healthy way that owed nothing to makeup, with curly, russet hair and a heart-shaped face. Her long, flowing gown shone spotlessly white and hugged her magnificent figure in all the right places. She couldn't have been more than 19 or 20. Fisher felt decidedly battered and dowdy in comparison, which didn't do a thing for her temper. The sister bowed again, showing off her cleavage, and smiled widely at Fisher.
Welcome to the House of Pleasure and Contentment, Captain. In what way may we be of service to you?
I'm looking for Buckin. Where is he?
The sister shook her head, still smiling.
We guarantee complete anonymity to all who come here, Captain. Within this house, our patrons are free to adopt whatever names or characters they wish. We ask no questions, demand no answers. We offer comfort and security to all who come here, and we protect their privacy. Whatever your business is with the man you seek, it will have to wait until he has left these walls.
Fisher scowled. She knew a set speech when she heard one.
All right. We'll do it the hard way.
Fisher reached out, took a handful of the sister's gown, and pulled her close so that their faces were only inches apart.
I'm Captain Fisher of the City Guard. I'm here on official business, and I want to see Charles Buckin right now. And if you or anyone else gets in my way, I'm going to bounce them off the nearest wall till their ears bleed. Got it?
The sister never flinched once. She met Fisher's gaze calmly, and when she spoke, her voice was mild and even and unafraid.
Kill me, if you wish. My sisters will avenge me. The secrets of this house are not mine to tell, and I will die rather than divulge them. No sister here will tell you anything, Captain. We will not betray those who trust us.
Damn!
Fisher let the sister go. She felt obscurely ashamed, as though she'd been caught bullying a child. She had no doubt the sister meant what she said. Her voice and face held the unquestioning certainty of the fanatic, probably brainwashed, or under Agius's compulsion, or both. Fisher stepped away from the sister. When in doubt, be direct.
Buckin! Charles Buckin!
I know you're here. Either get the hell down here and talk to me, or I'll go out in the street and tell everyone I see that you're in here. What do you think would happen to your reputation as a member of the God Squad if word got out that you were a sister lover? Buckin! Talk to me!
A second sister appeared from a concealed doorway. She wore the same white gown and was equally lovely in a cool, aristocratic way, but she was a little older than the first sister, and though she smiled and bowed respectfully, her eyes were cold and hard.
There's no need for threats, Captain. The person you seek has agreed to see you, even though he was assured he didn't have to. And, Captain, if he hadn't agreed, you would not have got any further in this house. We have spells to ensure our privacy, very unpleasant spells. Now, if you'll come with me, please.
Fisher gave the sister one of her best scowls, just to make it clear who was really in charge here, and then followed her through a series of stairs and corridors to a plain, anonymous door on the second floor. The sister bowed deeply and left her there. Fisher walked straight in without waiting for an answer to her knock. The room was luxurious without being overbearing, and the furnishings had the understated elegance of old money. Fisher wondered fleetingly just how old the sister's establishment was, and then fixed her attention on Charles Buchan. He was standing stiffly beside a chair on which sat a beautiful young woman, a pale, willowy blonde, barely into her 20s.
Is that it? All this secrecy just because he's fallen for a girl young enough to be his daughter? Wait, there's something wrong with this scene.
Fisher turned and closed the door to give herself a moment to think. As soon as she turned back, she recognized what it was. It was Buchan's attitude. That was what was wrong. Buchan met Fisher's gaze unwaveringly.
He's not ashamed, or indignant, or obsessed with the girl. He looks protective toward her, as though all that mattered was protecting the sister from me. If he cared at all about being found out, he's doing an excellent job of hiding it.
Captain Fisher, I should have known you'd find us out, if anyone would.
I don't like secrets. I take it personally when people hide things from me, particularly when it affects a case we're supposed to be working on together.
There's no connection between this and the God murders, Captain. You have my word on that. Annette, I'd like you to meet Captain Fisher, one of my colleagues on the Guard Squad. Captain, this is Annette, my daughter.
Annette smiled at Fisher, who stood dumbstruck.
Why don't we all sit down? This is going to take some explaining.
Yes, I think it is.
Buchan pulled up a chair beside Annette, and Fisher sat on a chair facing them.
Annette's mother was a young lady from a rival family. The heads of our families weren't speaking to each other, and there had even been a few duels. Nothing unusual, but it was all very tense, and the worst possible time for us to meet and fall in love. But we were young and foolish, and nothing mattered to us except each other. We were going to run away and be married secretly. We even had some naive hopes that our marriage would bring the families back together again. But she became pregnant. Her family found out, and when she wouldn't name the father, they sent her out of the city to stay with relatives until it was all over. She died giving birth to Annette. Her family let everyone assume the child was dead, too. They weren't interested in raising some bastard half-breed mongrel, so they gave her to the city orphanage. I went a little crazy after I heard my love was dead. I'd do anything for a laugh or a thrill, or just to fill my time. I chased women endlessly, trying to find someone who could replace the one I'd lost. Finally, it all got out of hand, and I ended up on the God Squad. It was interesting work, and it passed the time. In the course of squad business, I came here and discovered Annette. She looked just like her mother. I investigated her background and worked out who she was. I thought about it for a long time and then came here and introduced myself. She's very precious to me. For all my affairs, Annette is my only child. We sit and talk for hours, but somehow word of my visits to this house got out, at least in high society, and I couldn't explain why I came here. Someday Annette may choose to leave this place and take her rightful place in society. The quality must never know of her time here. They can be very old-fashioned about some things. So I decided to let people think what they wanted to about my visits to the Sisters of Joy. My friends and family disowned me, and the quality turned their back on me. But Annette's secret was safe. The rest you know.
Fisher shook her head slowly.
That story is so crazy. It has to be true.
Will you keep our secret? For her sake, if not for mine.
Sure. Why not? Hawk will have to know. But I don't see any reason why it should go any further.
Fisher looked at Annette.
Are you happy here? Really happy? If they've got any kind of hold over you, I can take care of it. No one's stupid enough to upset me and Hawk. If you want to leave, just say the word. I'll escort you out of here right now.
Annette smiled and shook her head.
Thank you, Captain. But I'm quite happy here. As I keep telling my father, I wasn't brainwashed into joining the Sisters of Joy. There isn't any Gius keeping me here, and if I want to leave, I'm perfectly free to do so at any time. The Sisterhood is a vocation, and one I believe in. How many other religions do you know that are simply dedicated to making people happy? Perhaps someday I'll feel differently, but even then I don't think I'll be joining high society. From what I've heard of the quality, I doubt we'd get along. In the meantime, my father and I have each other. No one ever told me who my father was. I never dreamed it would turn out to be the legendary Charles Buchan.
You don't want to pay too much attention to those stories, Annette.
Why? Aren't they true?
Well, yes, most of them. But I'm a reformed character now I've found you.
Annette raised an eyebrow.
Reformed? You?
Partly reformed.
Fisher got to her feet, feeling decidedly superfluous.
I'll leave you two alone, then. Good night.
They each favored her with a quick smile, and Annette gave her a small wave. Fisher smiled quickly in return and left them to each other. The Dead Dog Tavern was a seedy little dive in the north side, not that far from the Street of Gods. The air was full of smoke, the sawdust on the floor hadn't been changed in weeks, and the only reason the drinks weren't watered was that the patrons would have lynched the innkeeper if he'd tried it. Hawk and Fisher had used the Dead Dog as a meeting place before. It was the kind of place where everyone minded his own business and expected everyone else to do likewise, or else. Having Hawk and Fisher around didn't keep people away. The other patrons just kept their voices down and one eye always on the nearest exit. Hawk and Fisher liked the Dead Dog because it was quiet and convenient, and nobody bothered them. There weren't many places like that in the north side. Hawk glared into his ale and slouched in his chair.
We're getting nowhere with this case, Isabel. No matter which way we turn, we end up going round and round in circles.
Don't give up now, Hawk. We're getting close. I can feel it. Look, we know how the God murders took place. Somebody used the Exorcist Stone. That tells us who. It has to be one of the God Squad. Did you notice that when we talked about Bode's death and the lack of magic at his house, none of them even mentioned the Exorcist Stone as a possible murder weapon? That's significant. All we have to do is find a way to narrow it down from the three suspects to one.
That's not that simple, Isabel, and you know it. First, the Council put a Gius on all of them, specifically to prevent them from misusing the stone. If the compulsion spell had somehow been broken, the Council would have known immediately. And second, we still don't have a motive for the murders. What do any of them have to gain by killing gods?
They sat in silence for a while, nursing their ale.
Let's go over everybody again, one at a time. The one thing the three of them have in common is that they all have secrets. Buchan has a daughter who's a Sister of Joy. Tomb has broken God Squad rules by worshipping LaBelle and Kanyu. And Rowan is dying of cancer and doesn't want the others to know about it. Secrets often make for good motives. People will do desperate things to keep a secret hidden. So, suppose the dead gods knew about Buchan's daughter. Priests do talk to each other, even when they're supposed to be enemies. They're in the same line of business, after all. Word could have got around. What if the murdered gods had tried to use that knowledge to put pressure on Buchan to look the other way on occasion? Could be a very handy thing for a being to have a member of the God Squad in his pocket.
It's a nice idea, but I don't think it's Buchan. In order to come and go without being seen by the God's followers, the killer must have had access to some kind of sorcery. But Buchan doesn't have any. He had to use an ordinary disguise when he went to visit his daughter, remember? And besides, if he'd had any magic, He'd have used it against that creature at the Hellfire Club, wouldn't he?
Not necessarily. He could be trying to put us off the scent by not using magic when we're around. He might have known you were following him.
Firstly, if he'd known I was following him, he wouldn't have led me to the sisters and revealed his secret. Secondly, I don't really think Buckin's that clever, to be honest. He's famed for many things, but subtlety is not one of them. I think we'd be better off taking a hard look at Tomb. Now, he has a motive that makes sense. If the Council knew about his private god, they'd throw him off the squad. And Tomb's put a lot of time and effort into making the god squad a force to be reckoned with. He might see a threat to himself as a threat to the squad, and act accordingly. So if another being had found out and threatened to tell on him... Hey, wait a minute. I just had another thought. What if the god killings were some kind of sacrifice to Tomb's god? To make it stronger, more powerful?
Could be. Certainly Tomb's got enough sorcery to get in and out of the churches undetected.
And he certainly knew his way around when he showed us the murder sites earlier on.
No. We can't single him out on that. According to the informer, Lacey, all of the God Squad had visited the dead beings previously.
All right, forget that. But the rest still fits.
It still doesn't explain how he broke the Geas without the Council's circle of sorcerers knowing. That's supposed to be impossible.
Fisher nodded reluctantly.
All right. Let's leave Tomb for a moment and look at Rowan. She's got enough sorcery to move unseen. And she's certainly got no love for the gods.
Sure, but what's her motive?
Revenge. She's dying. She wants to kill as many of the gods she despises as she can before she dies.
That's pushing it a bit, isn't it?
Fisher shrugged. The two of them drank more ale, their scowls deepening as they struggled with the problem. People around them took in the danger signs, quietly finished their drinks, and made for the exits.
I don't know. Whatever motives the God Squad have, I keep coming back to the Geas. Either one of them's found a way around the compulsion spell, which is supposed to be impossible, or it has to be somebody else. Maybe it's really the Sorcerer Bode after all, using the Dark Men as weapons. Remember, two of the gods had been torn apart, which would seem to indicate that the killer had great physical strength.
You may have something there. But have you ever noticed that the Dark Men never attack us except when the God Squad aren't around?
They looked at each other for a moment.
Are you suggesting one of the God Squad is the controlling mind behind the Dark Men?
Why not? It fits. That's how someone on the squad could use the Exorcist Stone. The Geas was placed on a specific person. Once that person was in another body, a Dark Man homunculus, he or she became a different individual, free to use the Exorcist Stone without any restraints.
You're right. It does fit. I think we're finally getting somewhere. And it means we can rule out Buckin as the murderer. He was there when the Dark Man attacked us at the Hellfire Club. And anyway, he doesn't have the sorcery needed to transfer his mind from one body to another. You know, more and more makes sense now. Let's assume our God Squad murderer is the same person who hired Bode. That's why Bode sometimes didn't recognize his friends on the Street of Gods. Someone else was using a duplicate of Bode's body at the time. Bode's body could ask questions that a member of the God Squad couldn't ask without appearing suspicious. Whoever gave Bode his mission wasn't just hiring Bode as a person, they were also hiring his body. Hell's teeth, that's devious.
Don't get too excited. We still haven't got a motive. Let's try it from a different angle. What was Bode, or the person inside Bode's body, looking for on the Street of Gods?
Ways of getting to the beings?
No, they already knew how to do that as part of the God Squad.
Fisher scowled and doodled aimlessly in the spilt ale on the table.
Bode, or whoever was inside his double, was asking questions about the gods themselves. Their histories, their powers, their natures. It was the answers to these questions that marked the beings for death.
But what's so important about those questions? Every tourist in the street asks questions like those.
And they end up with tourist answers. But a sorcerer and a member of the God Squad might just get an answer that meant something.
Fisher sat up straight suddenly.
Hawk, I think I've got it. Remember the being who was stabbed to death? The Sundered Man? That priestess of his, Sister Anna, was really bitter about his death because it meant she'd wasted her life worshipping something that wasn't really a god after all. I don't know about the last death, the Lord of the New Flesh, but both the other dead beings died when the Exorcist Stone removed all the magic from their vicinity. The Dreadlord fell apart, and the Carmadine Stalker aged to death. That's what Bode and his employer were looking for on the Street of Gods. proof that a being wasn't a god after all, but just a supernatural creature with magic powers and a following.
Not quite. Turn it around. They weren't looking for beings among the gods. They were trying to find one real god among the beings and killing the ones who failed the test.
But why would Tomb or Rowan be so desperate to find a real god?
Fisher's eyes widened suddenly.
Because one of them needed a miracle cure. It's Rowan. It has to be. It all fits together. The killings only started after she joined the squad. She went to Bode when her potions couldn't control the cancer, probably hoping he'd have something that would help her. After all, he was an alchemist as well as a sorcerer. He didn't have a cure, but he did have the Dark Men, which was just what she needed to investigate the beings. She must have been getting pretty desperate by then. She couldn't ask questions on the street herself, so she got Bode to do it for her. And sometimes she did it herself in one of the homunculus bodies. Every time she thought she'd found a real god, she'd go to them and beg for a miracle cure. If they couldn't or wouldn't help her, she destroyed them, using the exorcist stone and the strength of the Dark Man. Presumably out of revenge for wasting her limited time.
No wonder she spent so much time in bed recently. Her mind was out and about attacking us in a Dark Man body. But why did she kill Bode?
Fisher shrugged.
Maybe he found out about the god killings and wanted to call it off. She couldn't allow that. She killed him the same way she killed the beings. She must have really panicked when she found out the same two guards who investigated Bode's murder had been seconded to the God Squad. That's why she tried to get rid of us when we first arrived. And why she kept attacking us through the Dark Men. We were so close to the answer all along and didn't know it. But then, why did she tell us she had cancer?
Trying for sympathy, I expect. Hoping that would distract us from seeing her as the killer. It almost worked. You don't expect a dying woman to be a murderer. We've got to get back to the squad and confront her.
What's the hurry? She's not going anywhere in her weakened condition.
Oh, no? What's to stop her from leaving her dying body behind and living on in a healthy Dark Man body?
A woman living in a man's body? That's kinky.
Don't knock until you've tried it. Now let's go. I want to put it past Rowan to have a few more tricks up her sleeve. And we can't afford another dead god.
The Street of Gods was unusually quiet. The riot had cleared the air somewhat, and most people were licking their wounds and waiting to see what would happen next. Guards and sorcerers walked the length of the street, keeping the peace, backed by armored contingents from the Brotherhood of Steel. But in the side streets and back alleys, the dark and shadowed places of the Street of Gods, plots were hatched and plans were whispered. The God War drew steadily nearer, awaiting only one last deadly spark. Anticipation filled the air like the smell of spilt blood, feared and desired in equal measure as man and God looked each to his own position and saw how it could be worse or better. Change had come to the Street of Gods, and whatever happened, nothing could ever be the same again. Four beings had been proved merely mortal, and no god could feel entirely secure after that. Hawk and Fisher trudged wearily back to God Squad headquarters, following the shortest route the street allowed. Hawk yawned continuously, too tired even to raise a hand to cover his mouth. Given the Street of God's eccentric attitude to the passing of time, he'd long ago lost track of what hour of which day it was, but it had been a hell of a long time since he'd last had any sleep. His feet felt like lead. His legs and back ached murderously.
Ugh, I'm getting old, Isabel.
You're just tired.
Me too.
Hawk smiled sourly. He always got gloomy when he was tired. Still, the sooner he and Fisher wrapped up this case, the better. The more tired you got, the more likely you were to make mistakes. And making mistakes on a case like this could get you killed. The few people still out on the street gave Hawk and Fisher plenty of room. Word of their victory over the rogue being had spread, and priests and worshippers alike kept to their best behavior while the two guards were around. God Squad headquarters finally loomed up ahead, and Hawk allowed himself to relax a little. The small, nondescript building, with its old-fashioned lamp shining brightly over the door, looked actually cozy. Almost there. Almost over. All they had to do was face Rowan with what they knew, and she'd crack. They always did when you had them dead to rights. Some villains even seemed relieved as you took them off to jail, as though they were as tired of the chase as you. Anyway, Rowan shouldn't be too difficult to handle. When all was said and done, without the exorcist stone in her hand, she was nothing more than a minor league magic user with a sideline in potions. With the suppressor stone to protect them from her magic, they should be safe enough, as long as they didn't drink anything she offered them. A sudden thought struck Hawk, and he stopped dead in his tracks, his mind working furiously. Fisher stopped, too, and looked at him.
Hawk, what's the matter?
I just thought of something. We've been assuming Rowan transferred her mind into a dark man, then used the exorcist stone against the beings, right?
Right.
But if the exorcist stone banished all the magic from the area, it should have affected the homunculus Rowan was inhabiting. After all, that's how we beat the original dark man, remember? You fired up the suppressor stone and he went out like a light. So if Rowan had used the exorcist stone, it would have knocked out the dark man she was using and thrown her back into her own body. Which means our whole theory has just gone up in smoke.
Don't panic. The stone doesn't work that way. It isn't designed to affect everything in the area, or it would end up affecting itself, destroying its own power. It has built-in safety guards, like our suppressor stones, so that they don't affect themselves or the people using them. It's only common sense, after all. If you'd paid attention at the morning briefing when the suppressor stones were handed out, you'd have known that.
Sorry. You know I'm never any good with technical stuff.
And you have the nerve to complain because I won't let you carry the suppressor stone.
All right, no need to rub it in. Anything else I ought to remember about the stone?
Yes. Unlike the exorcist stone, our stones have only a limited amount of magic. And we've been using our stone a hell of a lot just recently. And before you ask, no, there's no telling how badly we've drained it or how much magic there is left in the stone. These things are prototypes, remember?
They looked at each other.
If we try and arrest Rowan and the stone doesn't work, we're going to be in real trouble. Without the stone's magic to counteract hers, she'll just transfer her mind into a dark man body and disappear.
Then we'll just have to hope there's enough magic left in the stone to hold her.
This case just gets better and better. Look, how about if we get one of the others to use the exorcist stone? That should prevent her leaving her body.
All right. Who do we ask?
Buchan. We can't trust Tomb. He's too close to Rowan.
They continued on their way, frowning thoughtfully. Passers-by gave them even more room than usual. The two guards finally reached God Squad headquarters. Hammering on the door with his fist wasn't the politest way to knock, but Hawk wasn't in a polite mood. Buchan opened the door, sword in hand. He relaxed a little as he saw who it was, sheathed his sword, and nodded politely to them.
I was wondering what had happened to you two. Officially, we're still on emergency status, but things seem to have calmed down a lot now. The street's quiet, and the guard and the Brotherhood of Steel are out in force to make sure it stays that way.
I'll drink to that. Is everyone here?
Sure. Tomb and Rowan are talking upstairs. Want me to give them a call?
Not just yet. I think the three of us ought to talk first, in the drawing room. It'll be more private.
Buchan looked at him and then at Fisher, his face cold but composed. He nodded stiffly and led the way into the drawing room. After closing the door behind them, Fisher put her back against it so they wouldn't be interrupted before they were finished. Besides, she didn't want Buchan to have the option of leaving. He wasn't going to like what they had to tell him. Fisher couldn't blame him. It always comes hard to find someone you've trusted and fought beside as a traitor. Buchan looked at the two guards evenly, his gaze firm and unyielding.
This is about Annette, isn't it?
No, your secret's safe with us. It's irrelevant to our investigation. We need to talk to you, Sir Buchan. We know who the God Killer is.
You do? Who is it?
Buchan looked eagerly from Hawk to Fisher and back again.
Do you need my help with the arrest? Is that it?
In a way. You'd better brace yourself, Buchan. You're not gonna like this.
Buchan frowned uncertainly.
What's going on here?
It's Rowan. She's the God Killer. She killed all four beings in the Sorcerer Abode, too, probably because he wouldn't go along with her plans.
For a moment, Buchan's face was absolutely slack and empty. Then he shook his head in a dismissive gesture.
You're crazy. You're out of your minds, both of you. It can't be Rowan. She's one of us. Part of the God Squad has been for years. Besides, she's been ill. It couldn't be her.
She's the one. But she's not going to surrender herself easily. There might be trouble. We could use your help.
Do you have proof? Hard evidence?
Some. Enough. Now, will you help us?
I don't really have a choice, do I? If I don't, you'll tell everyone about me and Annette, right?
No. We don't work that way. Your secret's safe, whatever you decide. but we really could use some backup on this.
You are right. I don't like this. What do you want me to do?
First, go up and tell Rowan and Toom we're back and want to talk to them. If they ask what about, you don't know. Wait till they're safely downstairs, and then while we're having our little chat, you get hold of the Exorcist Stone and activate it. Hopefully our suppressor stone will be enough to hold her, but I'll feel better knowing you're there.
There's not to be any rough stuff. I won't stand for that. Rowan's done a lot of good work with the squad in her time. She even saved my life once. She deserves better than this.
She brought it on herself. How many guards died out there in the riot tonight, do you suppose? The riot she helped bring about.
That's enough, Isabel. He knows.
Buchan turned and headed for the door. He stepped out into the hallway, then stopped and looked back at Hawk and Fisher.
You'd better be right about this. If you're not, if you're only guessing, I'll break you. Rowan is God Squad. We look after our own.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and then moved as one to the drinks cabinet. They both felt very much in need of a stiff drink. Or two.
He means it, you know.
Damn right he means it. This could easily turn very nasty, Isabel. It wasn't until Buchan asked about proof and evidence that I realized how thin our case actually is. We can show motive and opportunity and demonstrate how it could have been done, but we'd be hard-pressed to prove any of it in court.
It's a bit late for second thoughts. We can't put this off. We have to confront her now. All it needs is one more dead being, and all hell will break loose on the Street of Gods. Probably quite literally. We'll just have to face Rowan with what we know, and hope she'll break down and confess.
And if she doesn't? If she laughs in our faces and tells us we're crazy?
Then I'll swear blind it was all your idea and nothing to do with me.
Thanks. What would I do without you?
Rowan and Toom faced each other across Rowan's bedroom. Rowan was in a towering rage, her face dangerously flushed, but Toom stood his ground.
You did what, Toom?
I ran a scanning spell on you, a full body scan. I was worried about you. It seems I had every right to be. You're ill, Rowan, very ill. You have been for some time. Your body's riddled with cancers. I'm amazed you're still able to function as well as you do. I can only assume your potions are effective painkillers, if nothing else. Why didn't you tell me, Rowan? Did you think you couldn't trust me?
I didn't tell you because I wanted to avoid a scene like this. How many times do I have to say it, Toom? This is none of your business. I'm none of your business. I have no interest in your feelings, and your interest in me is annoying when it isn't intrusive. I want you to stay away from me. Damn it, Toom, get the hell out and leave me alone.
I can't. You're dying, Rowan. You must know that. Your condition is so advanced now, there's nothing sorcery can do for you anymore. Healers aren't miracle workers. Why didn't you tell me earlier? I could have helped you.
I don't want your help. I don't need your help.
At least let me tell Buchan. We can handle the God Squad work between us for a while. You have to rest. Take things easy. We'll look after you.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? You do so love to fuss over me. Well, I haven't time for that nonsense anymore. I have things to do and not much time to do them in.
Things? What things? What can be more important than this? We're talking about your life, Rowan. If you'd rest and take things easy, you could have months ahead of you yet. There are still some things I can do, some things I can try. If you don't rest, you'll be dead in a few weeks.
A few weeks? I didn't realize it had got that close. Are you sure?
Yes. I'm sorry, Rowan. My scan was very thorough, and there's no room for doubt. Please, let me help you.
No. I've chosen my way, and I'll stick to it.
And if you're wrong...
Then I'm wrong. Trust me, Toom... Whatever happens, I'm not going to die.
Rowan, you have to face this. You can't just turn your back on it.
Get out of here, Toom. Find something else to do instead of pestering me. I have some thinking to do. What do you want?
Hawk and Fisher are back. They're waiting in the drawing room. They want to talk to us immediately. Apparently they've made a breakthrough on the God murders.
What kind of breakthrough?
They didn't give me any details. But they seem quite excited.
This better be important. I have things to do.
Tomb and Buchan followed her out of the room, each lost in his own separate thoughts. Rowan stormed into the drawing room and threw herself into her favorite chair. Hawk and Fisher stood together, their faces professionally calm, their hands resting on their sword belts. Rowan studied them both.
Buchan said something about a breakthrough. What have you found out?
The truth. It took us a while, but we finally got there. We know who the god murderer is.
Tomb entered the room just in time to hear that and brightened up a little.
Well, that is good news, Captain. When can we expect an arrest?
Hawk's eyes never left Rowan. Tomb's smile faded away. He made no move to sit down and studied Hawk's face closely.
What is this? I don't understand.
Rowan does, don't you, Rowan?
The mystic met his gaze unflinchingly.
I don't know what you're talking about, Captain.
All right, we'll do it the hard way. Rowan, you're under arrest for the murder of four beings and the sorcerer, Bode. You will come with us to guard headquarters, where arrangements will be made for your trial. If you wish to make a confession, pen and paper will be provided.
Hawk glanced at Tomb. The sorcerer was staring at him blankly. Rowan hadn't reacted at all, except for a small smile tugging at the corner of her mouth.
You really must be desperate if you're reduced to making blind allegations like that. What proof do you have? Where's your evidence? I have a right to know why I'm being charged.
There'll be time for that later.
We'll talk about it now. I'm a member of the God Squad, in good standing. We have friends in high places. They won't stand by and let you lay all the blame on me just because you're getting nowhere and the pressure's on you to make an arrest.
That's right. I think this has gone quite far enough. You must be mad, both of you. How could it be Rowan? She's been very ill and was actually confined to a bed when the killings took place. I understand the pressure you must both be under, but I'm damned if I'll let you get away with this.
That's enough. That's enough, Sir Tomb. We have a job to do, and you're not making this any easier for anyone. We know how the murders were committed, and we know why. And if you weren't so blinded by your feelings for Rowan, you'd have probably worked it out for yourself long ago. Rowan, it's time to go. Is there anything you want to take with you or anything you want to say?
I don't think so.
You're not taking her anywhere. I told you she's ill. She's in no condition to be locked up in some filthy cell. I won't allow it. If she has to be kept somewhere until she can be proved innocent, she can stay here, under house arrest.
I'm afraid we can't allow that. We have to follow procedure.
This is all irrelevant anyway. None of you has the power to hold me anywhere.
Rowan, dear, let me handle this.
No, shut up, Tomb!
Tomb gaped at her as she rose unhurriedly to her feet and smiled defiantly at Hawk and Fisher. Something in the room's atmosphere changed in that moment, and they could all feel it. Without drawing a weapon or moving a muscle, Rowan had suddenly become dangerous.
That suppressor stone of yours won't stop me, Captain Fisher. It'll protect you and Hawk from my magic, but it's not powerful enough to prevent me leaving any time I choose. I should have killed you both when you first came here, but I made the mistake of going by appearances instead of reputation. I really didn't think you had the brains to work out what was going on. By the time I realized you'd earned your reputation, it was too late to attack you directly. That would have been too obvious. Even Tomb might have noticed something. I tried using the Dark Men against you, but I couldn't match your training as fighters.
Rowan, what are you saying?
Tomb's face was pale and slack with shock. He made vague, fluttering movements with his hands, and there was desperation in his voice.
You mustn't listen to her, Captain Hawk. She's not well. She doesn't know what she's saying.
Yes, I do. I'm guilty, Tomb. Guilty as charged, guilty as hell. I killed Bode and the four beings, and I'll kill a damn sight more before I'm done. There are no gods on the Street of Gods, and I'll make them pay for pretending otherwise. I needed them. I needed them to be real, and they let me down. I'll see them all dead and rotting for that.
She smiled at Hawk and Fisher, and it was not a pleasant smile.
You want to arrest this body? Fine. Take it. I have plenty more, and this one's almost through. I would have had to abandon it soon anyway. You just made the decision a little easier.
I'm afraid not. I thought you might try and leave your body for one of your Dark Men homunculi, so I had a word with Buchan earlier. He has the Exorcist Stone, Rowan. Until we decide otherwise, no magic will work in your vicinity. You're stuck in your own body, and you'll stay there until your trial.
What are you talking about? Nothing's happened to the magic here, I'd know.
He gestured quickly with his left hand, and the lamp on the wall lit itself. Hawk looked at the bright flame, and his heart sank. He and Fisher looked at each other.
That shouldn't be possible. Isabel, go and find Buck and make sure he's got the stone.
That won't be necessary.
Everyone except Rowan looked around in time to see the Dark Man throw Buchan's bloodied form to the drawing room floor. The Dark Man strode into the drawing room, the exorcist stone clutched firmly in one large, bony hand. Two more Dark Men followed him into the room. They all wore the same shapeless furs, they were all heavily muscled, and they all had the same cold smile. Rowan's smile.
I've learned a lot since I first started working with Bode. In the beginning, it was all I could do to handle one body at a time. But the more I practiced, the easier it got. Now there's no limit to how many homunculi I can control at one time.
Toom had knelt beside Buchan and was checking his injuries with gentle hands.
Cracked ribs, broken right arm, cracked skull. Probably concussion as well. How could you do this, Rowan? He was your friend.
He would have used the stone on me. Luckily, for a famed duelist, he was surprisingly easy to sneak up on from behind.
We have to get him a doctor, Rowan. I can't heal serious injuries like these. He needs a specialist.
Rowan looked at Buchan unemotionally.
He would have used the stone on me.
She turned and looked at Hawk and Fisher again.
Keep your hands away from your weapons. I had a feeling you were getting too close to the truth. I'd planned to have the Dark Men ambush you as you left here, but this has worked out just as well. Now I have all my enemies in one place.
Where did you get all the Dark Men from?
Fisher played for time, mentally measuring the distance between her and the mystic. Rowan smiled.
I inherited them from Bode. He really was very talented. After I've had a chance to acquire his notes and study them, I'm sure I'll be able to create even more. I should even be able to produce copies of my original body without the original's defects. There's a lot to be said for the Dark Men. But I always feel so much more comfortable in my own body.
Buchan needs a doctor. He could die.
He never liked me. He never even looked at me.
Toom got slowly to his feet.
So, it's all true. Everything they said. And you're going to kill everyone who knows your secret.
That's right, Toom.
What about me?
What about you?
They looked at each other, and neither of them would drop their eyes. Hawk drew his axe, aimed, and threw it in one rapid movement while Rowan was distracted. The heavy blade buried itself between the eyes of the Dark Man holding the exorcist stone. The homunculus crumpled to the floor. The stone rolled away from his limp fingers. The two Dark Men advanced, one on Hawk and one on Fisher. Hawk threw himself at the fallen homunculus, put a foot on the head to steady it, and jerked his axe free. He spun around just in time to parry a sword blow from the approaching Dark Man. Sparks flew in the room as steel rang on steel again and again. Hawk and Fisher were forced back, step by step, from the sheer force of their attackers. The Dark Men pressed forward untiringly as the guards' arms began to ache from the effort of parrying the blows. Any other time, Hawk and Fisher might have been able to turn aside the attacks and launch their own, but they'd gone too long without rest or sleep. Hawk caught a glimpse of the exorcist stone lying on the floor, but it was a long way away, and besides, he didn't even know how to activate it. He swung his axe double-handed and tried to make himself some room to move in. Fisher attacked her Dark Man head-on, and the two of them stamped and lunged, their swords clashing and flying apart almost too quickly for the eye to follow. Rowan didn't know much about swordsmanship, but with the Dark Man's strength and reflexes, she didn't have to. All she had to do was keep up her attack and wait for Fisher's strength to run out. Toom faced Rowan squarely. Her face was blank and empty, but her muscles occasionally jumped and twitched in sympathy with the Dark Men.
Rowan, you've got to stop this. Get out of here while you can.
Not now, Toom. I'm busy.
Hawk and Fisher are guards, experienced fighters. They'll win in the end. And as long as they've got the Suppressor Stone, your magic can't hurt them.
There are ways round the Suppressor Stones. I have more magic than you think.
I won't let you hurt them, Rowan.
Life came suddenly to Rowan's eyes, and she fixed him with an unwavering stare.
Don't interfere, Toom. It wouldn't be good for your health.
Your magic's no match for mine, and you know it. There's still time to stop this nonsense, Rowan. We could leave here now, together, and use the Dark Men and our magic to cover our trail. We could leave Haven, start again somewhere else. No one could ever have to know about all this.
Yes, I could do that.
She stepped toward him, took hold of his chin, and pulled his face close to hers.
You'd give up everything to be with me.
Of course. I love you, Rowan.
I know.
She thrust her dagger into Toom's gut, twisted it once, then jerked it sharply upwards. Toom's hands clutched at her shoulders, closed tight, and then released her as he fell clumsily to the floor. His eyes were still open, staring reproachfully at the ceiling. Rowan turned her back on him and slipped the dagger back into its concealed sheath on her arm. Meanwhile, Hawk had got his second wind. He'd gotten more than a little annoyed at being beaten by a slab of muscle with no skills, and the anger had given him new strength. He brought his axe across to hold the dark man's sword locked in position. The two of them stood toe-to-toe, glaring into each other's faces. Without looking away, Hawk stamped down hard on the dark man's instep and felt as much as heard bones break in the dark man's foot. Rowan's mind tried frantically to deal with the pain. Hawk swung his axe in a vicious lateral sweep. The heavy blade cut through the dark man's throat, almost severing the head from the body. He fell heavily to the floor, twitched uncertainly, and then lay still in a growing pool of his own blood. Fisher suddenly broke away from her opponent and sprinted across the room toward Rowan. The mystic opened her mouth to begin a spell, but Fisher was already there, her sword point at Rowan's throat. The dark man froze where he was.
Drop his sword, Rowan, or I swear I'll kill you now and to hell with a fair trial.
Rowan glared at her. Fisher increased the pressure of her sword. A thin trickle of blood ran down the mystic's neck as the sword point broke her skin. Hawk stepped in behind the hesitating dark man and buried his axe in the back of the creature's skull. The dark man crashed to the floor. Some of the strength seemed to go out of Rowan, and her shoulders slumped. Hawk pulled his axe free and wiped it on the dark man's clothes. He looked to see that Fisher was all right and nodded, satisfied.
I trust there are no more surprises in store, Rowan. Isabel, keep an eye on her. I'll take a look at Toom and Buchan.
He knelt beside the sorcerer and winced at the awful wound. Rowan had all but gutted him. Blood had pooled around Toom and soaked his robes, but incredibly he was still breathing, shallowly. His eyes moved slightly to meet Hawk's gaze.
Lie still. We'll get you a doctor.
No point. I'm a sorcerer. I know how bad the wound is. I take it you beat the dark men?
Sure, we beat them.
Is Rowan all right? You didn't hurt her?
She's fine.
Good.
Toom closed his eyes.
Toom. Toom.
The man's breathing was so shallow that Hawk was sure each breath would be his last, but somehow Toom held on. Hawk moved over to Buchan. He was unconscious, but breathing strongly. His wounds looked nasty, but not immediately dangerous. Hawk got to his feet and moved over to join Fisher. She'd taken the sword point away from Rowan's throat, but held the sword ready just in case.
Toom's dying. Buchan is badly injured. They were your colleagues, Rowan. Your friends. They cared about you. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Rowan smiled briefly, but there was no humor there. Only a weary disdain.
I never wanted their friendship. All I ever wanted was to be left alone. Nobody really cares for anyone else. They just pretend to get what they want from you. They don't fool me. I look out for myself. You needn't look at me like that. I'm no different from anyone else. It's just that I have the guts to be honest about it. You can't hold me, you know. There are more dark men scattered all over Haven. Bode had been creating them for years, selling his potions to subsidize his experiments. He had a horror of dying, you see. He thought he could live forever through his doubles. I put a stop to that. I had a better use for them. I still do. You can't stop me. The magic in your suppressor stone is fading even as we speak. Soon it'll be cold and silent, and I'll leave this defective body behind and live again as a dark man. I will have my revenge on the Street of Gods, and there's nothing you can do to prevent it.
Maybe they can't, but I can.
They all turned, startled, to look at the doorway. A dark man stood there, smiling, dressed in a cheap gray robe and looking somehow different. He wasn't in the least muscular, being instead slender, almost to the point of malnutrition, and his face held none of the anger that was a permanent part of Rowan's expression, no matter the body she wore. Hawk looked quickly at Rowan, but she seemed just as surprised as he was. He looked back at the dark man. If she wasn't controlling the body, then who?
It can't be. It can't be him.
It is. It has to be. That's Bode.
The sorcerer smiled at them all and bowed politely.
At your service, Captain.
You're dead. I killed you. I watched you die.
I'm afraid not.
Bode stepped coolly into the drawing room.
Though you did give it a damn good try. Perhaps I should explain. It's a very interesting story, and there's no one else I can tell it to. Besides, I've been starved for company for the past few days. I've been watching all of you ever since my death, but I couldn't afford to be recognized, so I stayed in the shadows and waited for the right moment. I'm afraid you made a simple but understandable mistake, Rowan, my dear. When you surprised me at my home with the Exorcist Stone, you didn't encounter the real me, just one of my duplicates. I haven't lived in my own body for months. I kept that somewhere safe and lived in a series of homunculi. My experiments had become rather dangerous, you see, and I didn't want to subject my real body to unnecessary risks. So, when you activated the Exorcist Stone in my house after our little disagreement, you destroyed all the spells I'd set up, including the one that kept my spirit in the duplicate body. The stone threw me out of the homunculus and back into my own body. All you killed was an empty husk. You'd probably have worked it out for yourself if you'd had time to study my papers. But luckily, my dark man watchdog returned from the errand I'd sent him on, and you left in something of a hurry rather than risk being discovered. The watchdog was rather a crude prototype and, unfortunately, given to insane rages. But he had his uses. You've really caused me a great deal of difficulty, Rowan. Once the guard discovered the nature of my researches, I had no choice but to stay dead while I tracked you down. Establishing a new identity and starting over is going to be very difficult, not to mention expensive. And all because of your obsession with the Street of Gods. I should never have listened to you in the first place. But I needed the money. That's always been my problem. Dear me, listen to me talk, rambling on and on, and all of you too polite to interrupt. That's what comes of being officially dead. You don't dare talk to anyone for fear of being recognized. So, let me get straight to the point. I want my duplicates back under my control, and I want revenge for all the inconvenience I've been put to. So I'm afraid you're going to have to die, Rowan. It's the only way. And of course, I can't leave any witnesses. Well, I'm sure you understand. It's nothing personal, Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher.
You haven't got enough magic to get past our suppressor stone, and you don't have the muscles you gave your dark men. So you can take your threats and stuff them where the sun doesn't shine. You're under arrest for illegal research on a homunculi.
There was a soft scuffling sound behind Hawk, and he instinctively threw himself to one side. The dead dark man's sword only just missed him and plunged deep into Rowan's side. The force of the blow threw her back against the wall, clutching desperately at the blade of the sword. Her face was full of pain and horror as she stared at the risen dead man, but she couldn't find the breath to scream. The dark man pulled the sword free, lacerating her hands cruelly, and stabbed her neatly through the heart. She sank slowly down the wall, leaving a bloody trail behind her. Hawk swung his axe and buried it in the dark man's back. Hawk jerked his axe free, and he and Fisher moved quickly to stand back to back. The dead body turned slowly to face them, unaffected. All three dark men moved steadily toward them, blood still seeping from their death wounds, their eyes bright and knowing.
I've gotten a lot further in my researches than Rowan ever did, and I learned a lot more on the Street of the Gods than I ever passed on to her. I really shouldn't have let her know as much as I did, but she seemed so keen, so interested. And it was a long time since I'd been able to talk to anyone about the advances I'd made. Of course, in the end, she decided she wanted it all for herself, which meant I had to be disposed of. I really should have known, but then I never was a very good judge of character. Still, she's dead now, really dead. One of the things I never taught her was how to keep someone from leaving their body, but I know how. No more dark men for you, Rowan, my dear.
Hawk listened to the man chatter with one ear while he concentrated on the circling dark men. They moved slowly but surely and held their swords with a confident grip. They didn't breathe, and blood no longer ran from their wounds. There was no doubt they were all dead, animated only by the sorcerer's will. Hawk thought quickly, running the possibilities through his mind. He couldn't get to the nearest exit, so he'd have to stand and fight. A lich may be unkillable, but it can still be stopped. Disable them by cutting through the arms and legs or severing the head, and they'd be helpless. Hawks smiled sourly. Sure, as easy as that. But since he had no other choice, when in doubt, be direct. He jumped forward and swung his axe in a vicious arc at the nearest dark man. Light flared up, filling the room with its glare, and one by one the dark men slowed to a halt and fell heavily to the floor. Hawk looked quickly around. Toom had dragged himself across the floor, leaving a wide trail of blood behind him, and now he sat propped against the wall with the exorcist stone in his hands. The stone blazed like a miniature star, too bright to look at, banishing all magic from the room. Bode looked at Toom incredulously. Toom smiled, showing bloody teeth.
This is for Rowan, you bastard! Hawk, kill him!
Bode looked back at Hawk and quickly raised his hands in the air.
I surrender, Captain!
Like hell.
Hawk cut the sorcerer down with one blow. Bode died with the same incredulous look on his face.
What the hell? He'd have only escaped anyway.
They put away their weapons and moved over to kneel beside Toom. The exorcist stone slipped from his fingers and rolled away. Its light flickered and went out. Toom's face was deathly pale, the blood at his mouth stark red against the white skin. He looked across at Rowan, lying still and lifeless, and his mouth worked once.
I loved her, you know. I really loved her.
He closed his eyes. Hawk felt for a pulse in Toom's neck. It was there, but so faint he could barely feel it.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, but don't ask me how. You'd better go for a doctor. I'll try and keep Toom and Buck comfortable till you get back.
He looked across at Rowan.
You suppose she ever cared for him at all?
I don't know. Maybe. Things have been different.
Yeah, maybe. He deserved better.
Then a living presence exploded in the room, suffusing everything with a glow of its existence. The presence beat on the air like a giant heartbeat or the wings of a powerful bird. A deep and desperate sorrow permeated the room, grief beyond bearing, until Hawk felt as though he would break down and weep at any moment.
What is it?
Fisher's eyes shone bright with unshed tears.
What's happening?
It's Le Bel Inconnu, the god the tomb worshipped, the dying god. It's come here to be with its friend in their last moments, so neither of them would have to go into the dark alone.
In a moment, the presence faded as though it had never been. The room seemed to echo with its loss. Hawk looked down at Toom and didn't need to check the man's pulse to know that he was dead, too. The Street of Gods was back to normal again, or at least as close as it ever got to normal. The sky was a bright and cheerful blue, and reminded Hawk of pleasant summer days, as long as he didn't look at it too closely. The unmoving clouds and lack of a sun tended to spoil the illusion. Priests and worshippers crowded the street, bustling back and forth and playing out their familiar roles in the never-ending game of salvation and damnation. Seekers for truth rubbed shoulders with wide-eyed tourists, all of them heckled by street preachers and badgered by concession stall holders. It was all very much business as usual, for mortals and beings alike. Guard constables and brothers of steel stood together on street corners, keeping an eye on things and swapping lies about their exploits during the recent unrest. The priests pretended they weren't there and concentrated on the more important task of sneering at their inferiors and ostentatiously ignoring the rest. There was almost an air of carnival on the Street of Gods, a celebration of life, of chaos narrowly avoided. When you got right down to it, no one had really wanted a god war. It was bad for business. Hawk and Fisher strolled down the street, taking their time and enjoying the sights, accompanied by Lord Lewis Hightower. People who recognized the two guards gave them respectful bows and plenty of room. Hawk smiled graciously. It seemed to him he'd never seen the street so calm and serene. There was still the usual sprinkling of supernatural flotsam and jetsam, a headless man crawling down the street on hands and knees, a flock of birds that flew in an endless circle overhead, a laughing woman covered with bubbling blood and burning coals where her eyes should be. But even they seemed content to keep to themselves and not bother anyone.
I don't think I've ever known the street so peaceful. One can only hope it'll last.
I doubt it. People have short memories, and from what I hear, the beings aren't much better. Except when it comes to feuds.
You're probably right. Still, the beings have settled down somewhat now that the God-Killer has been identified and dealt with. And the priests are behaving themselves for the moment. I suppose your work here is pretty much finished.
Pretty much. The guard sorcerers are searching the rest of the city for more of Bode's homunculi, just in case. But that's the only loose end. We're just hanging on here till the council appoints a new deity division. Buckin's the only survivor of the last God Squad. It'll be some time before he's ready for duty again.
Indeed. I looked in on Charles earlier today. He was looking decidedly pale, but much improved. Amazing what they can do with healing spells these days. And the delightful young lady acting as his nurse seemed very competent.
She'll take good care of him. Annette's very fond of Buckin.
They walked a while in silence, each of them waiting for the other to continue.
All right, Lord Hightower, what the hell are you doing here? Not that we aren't pleased to see you, but I can't believe this is the kind of venue you normally choose for a pleasant constitutional.
I'm here because the council has selected me to be part of the next God Squad. I applied some time back when I realized how bored I was with my life. The family estate practically runs itself, and no interest in politics or the romantic intrigue so beloved by high society. And even the Hellfire Club was starting to seem a bit childish. But Buckin had seemed happy enough with his work in the God Squad, so I applied. The council contacted me last night and gave me the good news. Personally, I think it just goes to show how desperate they are, but that's their problem. I can't wait to see who they're going to choose as sorcerer and mystic. In the meantime, I've been given the responsibility of keeping the peace on the Street of Gods. If I'm to do that, I'm going to need people to work with I can trust, and the priests and beings will respect. I need you, Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher. What do you say?
Hawk took a quick look at Fisher.
Sure, we'll help you out, but only until the new squad's ready to take over. The Street of Gods is an interesting place to visit, but I'd hate to have to work here.
Hawk and Fisher, The God Killer, is a Graphic Audio production.